I'm ordering Mr. Fox to pay £90,000 to each of them. That's quite high. There is no element of punishing Mr. Fox in that. It is purely a compensatory award to redress the damage done and restore the equilibrium that his libels violated. Yeah. I've never received an apology from these bastards who ruined my life. And she talks about I theatrically lack empathy and shit like that. Are my children entitled to empathy? Lady Injustice Collins Rice. Are they entitled to it? Their father losing their livelihood. Hello, and welcome to a very special pre-election, post-libel, remedies, damages, hearing, episode of Fox and Father with me, the Fox, and him, the...
Father.
For those of you who haven't seen the show before, what we do is I pick a story, I have it in an envelope, I keep it on me, I give it to Calvin, he comments, we talk about the issue, and he then reciprocates, and then there's a third envelope, which Theon, who usually sits over there,
He's left us, he's gone into the other room.
This is a Mary Harrington tribute cigar.
This is a Mary Harrington tribute pipe.
Yeah, so I anticipate this one may be a bit... spicy, and Calvin's natural serenity may, let's see if your serenity will rub off on me a bit.
Okay. First of all, how are you?
Weirdly okay. I keep telling you that I had this dream where, because I feel a bit persecuted, I keep having this recurring dream, which is like, you need to start giving. And I know you've said that to me before. It's not about, like, I need help, help me. It's more like, I need to give rather than, giving the wrong way. I don't know. It's coming to me in dreams. And if something's coming to you in dreams, then that's a direct line, I'd say.
Especially as it tends to come from the conversation that we've been having, that you need to go to church. Mm. You believe in God, you believe in Jesus, you need to go to church.
Well, I want to come to church, okay. And I tried to come to church yesterday.
I just called you and said, are you coming to church?
Yeah, but I've got five little puppies.
There's always an excuse.
What was so brilliant was that, on Friday night, Maggie Moo, the dog.
Yes, I love Maggie.
She can't take it anymore, right? She barely walk up the stairs now, but she's just...
Her belly was on the floor. It was on the floor as she walked.
She's glued to me as well. Like, she's wouldn't leave me alone, and it's right in my face, so she's getting a bit irritating. But, I'm obviously the man in her life, and she felt vulnerable and insecure, or in need of security. So
she's always been a needy dog anyway.
Friday night, about, you know me, I like to get to bed about 10:30. I was lying on my bed about 10:30 with Maggie, and I'm on the phone to Liz, and then I sort of move my hand, and I'm like, "What's that?" And I look down, and she's lying on my chest. She just plopped a puppy off the side.
No way.
So out comes Blaze 2.0.
Oh, that's about Blaze 2.0 is the most gorgeous one of those puppies.
The black and tan number. Yeah. So I get on the phone to Liz, and I get the kids, and the kids are all excited. And it was just, it's just nothing better.
I was gutted because I was at your house like an hour before.
I know you were.
Like,
we were having dinner just before, weren't we? So it was literally an hour later. Lewis Blackpool was there. Yeah.
Did he see it?
Yeah, he was just like,
so cool.
And it was just magical. But so the first one comes out, and then I had to wait 2 hours. And I'm like, oh God,
I did.
But Lizzie's now in her pajamas in the car with her kids in pajamas. We're like 1 a.m. And I hear that there was some, from her kids, I heard that there was some pretty profound road rage.
Really?
From her, like, going, we got a dog in labor.
Yeah.
And so they arrive about 1 or 2 in the morning, and two more have popped out in quick succession.
Right.
And then another long wait. And then what I call the June worms, those worms in the film June.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the little fat ones, little fat puppies, they popped out. So we have 4, and it gets like 5:30 in the morning, and Eugene and me and Winston are just like, oh, I don't know anymore. Yeah. So I put her on the bed on her basket. And I woke up in the morning, and there was number 5.
Okay. And is this the runt?
No, runty was number three.
Oh, okay.
Sadiq Khan, I call him.
Right. That's harsh.
Sorry. No, it won't be called Sadiq Khan in real life. But weirdly, it's really horrible. It's kind of, it's doing my feelings for Sadiq Khan quite a lot of good because I'm really compassionate to the runt. Come on, Sadiq, have a feed. But Maggie's an amazing mum and bringing life into the world and sharing that experience with your children. Oh, yeah. And it's just a magical thing. So that was... that was incredible.
And
I've been basically looking after them all week. And then my lovely assistant is at home at the moment, keeping an eye on them while I'm here at work. And we're meeting with this media organization later on, another media organization, to discuss possible collaborations. So we'll see how that goes. And obviously, we've got hence the election special. We've got the election, but we'll discuss that later. Yeah, anyway, that is a very fast version of my news.
That's good. That's the best one we've had so far.
I've rested and you know what? I think that how much worse can it get? And also, how much more, is there anything more dangerous with it than a man who's got nothing left to lose?
Forget all that stuff. Like, you've had a week essentially with your kids and your dogs. That's what life's all about, man. It's simple. Like, forget all the politics stuff, the toxicity in London, all that mess. And you look so much better for it.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah.
That's very kind. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Well, you're all the same old.
I mean, all I
just
do.
Just one day you're going to turn up and go, I feel despairing.
I go to church.
I'm coming on next Tuesday.
Good, good. I do Fox and Father. I do my show on the Lotus Eaters. Then I go back to church. I've got a pretty straightforward life.
You've got a great life. And I don't mean this with any disparagement at all, but this amazing guy who and his wife who walk the dogs in the morning when I'm working, I look to him with so much, it's not envy, it's admiration.
Yeah.
Like, he adores what he does for a living. Blaze, Blaze, just stares at him like, you're my absolute hero. He's never not got full of positivity, full of optimism, full of hope, full of appreciation, full of it's not like I want to swap with this guy because he's amazing, but I just admire him so much because it's like, it doesn't really matter what you do with your life, if you're enjoying it, you've won, right? Or if it brings you some sort of peace, you've won.
Yeah, you know, I think in my 20s I had this vision that you had to be rich and successful and you had to like do X, Y, and Z, but actually all that is a nonsense. It's all like a false dream. Living the life is worshiping God, loving your friends and your family, and it's as simple as that. That the simpler you keep it, the better you feel for. You know, this is why I'm so happy you're moving to the country. It's going to be great for your soul.
It will be good for my soul, if sad for other things. But you're right. The simpler you keep it, the better.
Yeah.
And actually, when I was very rich, which I was for a period of my life, I got paid so much money. I kept just, whenever they tried to redo a Lewis, and I was like, I've got to do something else other than Lewis, I'd say, I don't want to do it. And they'd say, well, here's just some more money. They just keep adding noughts. And actually, the most unhappy I've been in my life is when I've been the most rich. And to the point where I was, you know, you're just like, what does any of this mean?
Well, because you had everything, but really you had nothing.
Yeah, it is. There's been a bit of that. So, yeah, you know, you've got to, the more adversity is thrown in your face, the more I think you're driven towards a simpler life anyway. And actually, I do 4 years of punching and being punched at this crazy rotting demonic world. I think you need a break to recharge, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, you'll find a different way to contribute that isn't sucking at your blood every 5 minutes.
Anyway, so you're good and you've had a nice chill. And any more trips to America planned?
Yes. I am off at the beginning of June to Huntsville, Alabama, to meet my friends over there. Got lots of good Anglican friends over there who are I'm going to preach for them, and they're going to give me a bit of a holiday as well because they've seen how crazy this year has been. I'm off to Rome next week for a brief visit. That's always nice.
Holiday or work?
No, work, yeah. It all looks good. So let me give you an envelope.
Oh, God. Oh, it's a thickie.
Oh, yeah.
It's a thick envelope. I can't open it. Oh, this is not a good sign. You've tied the bow too carefully. Oh, there you go. I've got it now.
Sorry.
Right. Thanks, Calv.
All right, it should be an easy one for you, this one.
Lawrence Fox ordered to pay £180,000 in damages after being found guilty of libel.
Now, how ridiculous is this? This story is... I mean, it gets on my nerves for obvious reasons. Not just because you're my friend, but the fact that they called you a racist. And they just says, we're not sure what that racism means. We're not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. We're not sure if you suffered any damages. You called them a paedophile in return. Oh, yes. 90 grand to you, 90 grand to you. Like, wait, what? The blind eye of the law?
I'm really, really, really concerned about the... I mean, we've seen it. We see it in America, you know, with what's happening with Trump, the fact that it's just lawfare. Yeah. You see it with what's happening with Kevin Lister in our DfE case. And the fact that, you know, for refusing to lie to a child and, you know, call it a sex that it isn't, this ridiculous bullshit idea of misgendering, he's been put on a DBS check. So he cannot, so a guy who's given his life to education has been put on a DBS check as a danger to children. And that was what, that's why I mean, you know, this kind of I need to rest thing.
Yep.
The insanity of that makes me so fucking angry. Sorry, there's going to be a few swear bots this week because it just drives me nuts. So when this damages thing comes down,
yeah,
I'm like, we knew that obviously they're going to get damages, aren't they? The thing that I find insane, again, is this judge who I'm not meant to call, but I'm going to call her Lady Injustice Collins Rice, says, actually, let me quote the exact thing that she says, because this not much sends a shiver down my spine, but this sent an absolute shiver down my spine that someone could say this openly, right? Bearing in mind that these people, I criticise Sainsbury's, for those of you that don't know, I criticise Sainsbury's for virtue signalling, and basically saying if you don't shop at Sainsbury's, you're racist because we provide them with black safe spaces because they were jumping on the George Floyd bandwagon. Yeah. Turns out he was high off his head on speedballs and fentanyl, but oh no, never mind. It's, you know, George, no one who from different coloured skin can do anything wrong. I'm ordering Mr. Fox to pay £90,000 to each of them. That's quite high in terms of damages. There is no element of punishing Mr. Fox in that. It is purely compensatory award to redress the damage done and restore the equilibrium that his libels violated and which he has not taken the opportunity to restore more fully in himself. Right. So just where I can stop there to Lady Injustice Collins Rice, the minute I had said that, I said, this, you threw a slanderous accusation at me, a baseless slanderous and false allegation at me, and I responded. I explained that.
Yep.
Within minutes.
But even worse than that, you said that what you didn't actually think they were paedophiles. You were using that as an example.
I didn't even know. I thought Crystal was a girl.
Well, you just...
Until I found out he was a twerking little twerker.
But you can't... You were just highlighting the point that you just can't call people names without any backing it up. You can't just throw these words out there, slanderous, right? So you made it clear that you didn't think they were paedophiles, but they did think you were racist.
They maintained it.
And they didn't prove that you were racist, yet still... They're the ones who get damages and you don't. My mind boggles at this.
So that drives me nuts in itself. So it's a factual inaccuracy. I did attempt to restore it. And in the court fucking day, I said, if I did upset you, I am sorry. Yeah. I've never received an apology from these bastards who ruined my life. And she talks about I theatrically lack empathy and shit like that. Are my children entitled to empathy? Lady Injustice Collins Rice. Are they entitled to it? Their father losing their livelihood. God, she makes me angry. Anyway, please give me peace. I'm emotional. Mr. Baker, Mr. Seymour have been successful in fighting for their legal rights and are entitled to the law's effective vindication. They've also been resilient and resourceful in trying to get on with the rest of their lives. They both got fucking promoted. The little guy that angle grinds in front of children is still angle grinding in front of children while drag queen story hour, satanic little...
So in what way were they damaged?
Well, we'll get to that. They've also been resilient and resourceful in trying to get on with the rest of their lives. they both got promoted and have a strong support at home, in the workplace, and in some quarters of the public and media. There is not a single part of the media who reported this incident who mentioned the fact that I was called a racist once. Not one newspaper. We took it through. Every single newspaper just reported the fact that I called them paedophiles. They didn't provide any context. So that's ridiculous. This is in her, it's like shameless, but this bit is the bit that makes me think she's terrifyingly. She's either not understood it at all, which can't be the case because she sat there for 8 days.
Yeah.
Or she's so confident in the fact that the judiciary can do what the fuck it wants and we just have to sit there and deal with it, that she goes, had that not been so, and Mr. Fox's random selection of victims turned out to be less self-sufficient and well-supported, the award would have been considerably higher. It's a lie. The woman's fucking lying. Sorry if that affects my appeal, but that's a factual mistruth.
So neither the press nor the judiciary recognized the reason that you said what you said, even though you explained it for 8 days in court.
Yeah.
So, it's almost as if the system is stacked up against you.
Well, I get that the system's stacked up against me, but I at least thought if the judiciary are going to be biased, which is what I think they are, look, there's no point in attacking the judiciary for bias because they all want to protect each other, and I get it. But what you can do is go, that's a mistruth. That's misconduct. That's misconduct in public office for me.
Well, this is why you wanted a jury. You wanted a panel of your peers.
I wanted a panel of my peers, and I deserved a panel of my peers, yeah. So I didn't get an activist judge, which is what I think she is. I think she's an activist judge. And to say it's a random selection of victims, these people called me a racist. Yeah. I was fired by my agent the next day.
So what can you do going forward? Can you appeal that decision?
We're going to apply to appeal, yeah. Right. And it won't do my chances of appeal any good with me ranting like this. But I have said to the legal team, you can attack them on points of law, and I will attack them on the fact that this is a blatantly biased political judgment of the worst, the most egregious kind. And I think that if we lose our faith in the judiciary, yeah. We've lost our faith in the police,
yeah.
We've lost our faith in the fact that they're socially transitioning our children behind our backs. We have lost our faith in every single foundational institution in this country. And if you lose your faith in the judiciary, what recourse do people have?
Well, then we're in a lawless society.
We are.
That's why this is so terrifying, because if you can't have faith in the system to provide justice, then we're on our own. That's what's scary about it.
Yeah, I don't see myself and it's not like I'm a victim, because her argument is that, you know, my theatricality in some way applies to my lack of empathy. It's like, I don't walk around pretending to be a highly empathetic man, but I have as much empathy as...
But I've always disliked that, because so what if you didn't have empathy? It's not a legal requirement of this land to have empathy. Like, if you apologize, do you apologize? Great. You don't have to feel anything for the victim. I mean, you should, but by the law, why should you? It's like, when you have these trials to get out of prison early, what do they call them?
Oh, parole hearings.
Yeah, and it's like, is he empathetic? Is he apologetic? It's all about feelings. It's not actually about facts anymore. It's not about, well, is this person guilty or not guilty? Has he served his time or not? It's like, how does he come across? How does he feel? Like, how you feel should have nothing to do with this case.
Yeah, exactly. And how she feels should have even less to do with this case. And this is the problem that I think society is falling into. And we've discussed this before. I was watching Keir Starmer trying to backtrack on his bollocks gender crap. And he was going, you know, it's all about kindness and respect and empathy. And it's like, kindness, respect, and empathy, those three values that tie Sir Keir Starmer so deeply into his modern worldview, do you know what they've led to? The most divided, broken world. Mm. We need to deal, as you say, in empiricism and facts. And the facts, if you can't get a judge to write some facts on a piece of paper in a judgment, I would have given them more money if they hadn't been so... Poor old them. No mention of my family. And, no mention of the fact what essentially we've got in this country now as a point of law is that if you walk into a pub and punch someone in the face, you're going to get damages if they retaliate. That's bullshit. You cannot have a country where the person who throws the first punch in a bar brawl gets the damages.
Well, we've had that for a while, haven't we? When if people are burglaring or breaking an entry into a house and you retaliate in some way or try to prevent them, you'd be the one who is facing charges. It's been upside down for a while.
Yeah.
What about the media? Is there any retaliation you can get there? Any kind of, because there are journalistic standards that people have to adhere to. So if they're publishing, you called people a paedophile without saying why you call them a paedophile, if they're covering half the case, but not the full case, is there any recourse there?
It's a good idea. I, as you know, my faith in the mainstream media of any kind is like, So someone was saying to me last night on, you know, because I was having an argument with Narinda, what a face, you know, because she was going on about all the racists will be happy that this guy stabbing people is white. And I'm just like, you're the worst. And then I was laying into her and Bushra, another one of your faves, turned around and she was like, if you aspire to work in the political arena, you can't lower yourself to this thing. And I went, aspire to work in the political arena? Are you joking? You think I want to work with these vile cretins? I don't want to be accepted by the political class. Do you see what Dominic Cummings said this morning? We'll insert the Dominic Cummings thing. It's just, he's worked in closest to government out of, you know, certainly more than me. Yeah. I mean, I've been around the House of Parliament and I've seen what those people are up to, and it ain't in our best interest, I can tell you that. So bollocks to trying to aspire to work out with the political class. Dominic Cummings is just like, they're not in charge of anything, those politicians. No. They're just little puppets on a string that do what they're told, and all they really care about is getting promoted, which is what you would want if you wanted power.
That's what we've been saying. They protect their own position. That's all they're bothered about. Getting into power and then protecting their power. That's it. They're not bothered about the people. But Bushra is just disingenuous and condescending. And I mean, you don't aspire to be in the political sphere, but you are in the political sphere. So she's got nothing to say. But Narinda, don't even engage her. She's just...
No, I blocked her now.
She's just on a different level.
I blocked her now. And the point that I made, which was when I think both of us did, when we were working for our former employer, asked to have Tommy and Katie and people on there. But that you can have a racist on the channel if they're brown.
Racists are fine.
Racists are fine, just not white ones. Not that Tommy's a racist.
No.
Or Katie Hopkins is a racist.
People
but she
that are
is a racist.
Perceived as racist by the left, are not
in
allowed,
my opinion.
People who are actually racist are allowed.
Mm.
It's like Dr. Scholar's on TV every 5 minutes. She's an actual racist.
She is.
Take it to court if you like. I'll prove it. She is a racist.
You'd lose. I'll tell you why you'd lose.
Yeah,
because you're a conservative.
Yeah,
you'd lose. The courts have got nothing to do with. I mean, it was my entire. I've got to calm down after this. But I haven't ranted at you about it too much. So it was my entire belief that we could have faith in the judiciary.
Mm.
That out of all of the institutions that are corrupted in this country, that have been destroyed and marched through by radical leftists who have destroyed our city and our culture and left our borders open, the one people you can have faith in was the judiciary. Well, here's news for you, chaps. The judiciary is captured, bent, and corrupt.
And you're not just saying that. You used to say to me all the time, look, this case is going to be, the judge is going to have to decide what racism means. Is it the old way that we all understood it to mean of discrimination against someone based on their ethnicity? Or is it the new way of this power dynamic between white people and non-white people? She's going to have to decide. And actually, she said, no, I don't want to. I'm not going to decide either way. I don't know what racism means. I don't know if you were genuinely called a racist. I don't know any of it. Like, just opted out.
Yeah. And in this very polarized world that we live in, the reason why they shouldn't get any damages either is because the people that are on their team, on Team Woke, will not have changed their view about me being a racist. And the people on my team will not have changed their view about me not being a racist.
No.
So no one's really suffered any harm at all. I mean, I arguably said I really have suffered some serious harm because it's palpable and obviously true, because here's what I earned up until the time they called me a racist.
Yep.
And here's the hundreds of acting jobs I did over 22 years.
Yeah.
And here's the ones I did after they called me a racist. She ignored all of that.
I
evidence.
Find that so bad.
Every single
it's objective. Like you can outline the evidence is there.
She ignored
whereas
it.
Whereas theirs is the opposite. They, like you say, they've been promoted, encouraged, supported. They've been platformed where you've been deplatformed. For me, this is black and white.
It is black and white. And she ignored all of the evidence. And we'll appeal it. And no doubt this will feature in the appeal. But I don't care. I have my free speech and I have my rights to free speech.
The thing is, we don't have free speech.
Well, no, I do have free speech. It comes with the destruction of your life and it comes with the destruction of everything you value other than your children. But it affects your children as well. You know, I'm frightened of going... After that, I don't want to go. I'm frightened of going to watch my son play football in case, you know, some lunatic asshole lefty who's, you know, sends their kid to some 10 grand a term school where all they teach their kids to do is smoke weed and dye their hair blue will come up and sort of front me up with some of his sort of dressed like a 25-year-old, but in sort of thinning head, whatever.
Man-childs, yeah.
Man-childs. Again, we talked about it last week, but it is the end of it. The infantilization of adults and giving children the responsibilities.
But they wouldn't front up to you. These lefties are always cowards. What they'll do is they'll tell their children that you're racist and stay away from you or something like that. Or their children will say something to your children. They'll never come up to you face to face or very rarely.
Well, Lady Injustice Collins Rice doesn't seem to give a shit about my children or have any empathy whatsoever towards them. Mm. So the offspring of those, of the dirty ones of us lot, you know, I cannot see a country where that will hold.
Mm.
Because now that we have been given this platform, the X platform, certainly to get out there and say views, and these people that have been in the wilderness for years, the Tommies, the Alex Joneses, and various, and the fact that you've got Tucker going off on, you know, and people coming back, I don't think the lies and the knots of the establishment bullshit can hold together for much longer. And I, for one, will be applauding its demise. And I've never thought that before. I've always thought we need some sort of, you know, peaceful revolution and people to say enough and just a replacement.
Yeah.
But that ain't happening.
No, it's not possible. The institutions themselves have been corrupted, so they all need to crumble.
They need to, least the top slice of each and every one of them needs to go, because there are some decent people in all institutions. And I often think we're guilty, and I'm going to stop ranting soon because I want to hear what you've got to say. But there are some decent people in all institutions of society, and we can't just lump everyone in together. But the heads of every single national institution are corrupt to the very, very core, and that includes politics. Well, we knew that in politics, but the establishment is yuck.
Well, the conservatives who are in these institutions haven't been conserving the institutions. They've been letting the liberals and the progressives take over and corrupt these institutions. So when you say there are some good people in these institutions, are they good people? They've let it all happen, or they've encouraged it to happen. So I think the whole thing needs to fall apart, which makes me no longer a conservative. That makes me an anarchist. The whole of the thing needs to fall apart. The whole swamp needs draining.
You've suffered this yourself. You know, I've listened to, do you remember when you sent me that recording of that, we can cut this out by the way, but you sent me the recording of that when you were being told that why you weren't going to be ordained. Are we going to cut that out or are we going to keep it?
No, keep it.
Yeah. So you sent me that.
Whenever you sit down with a bully, record it.
I know I do. And I listened to it as I walked to work. Sometimes I walked to work to, you know, especially in the nicer weather. And by the end, do you remember I called you? I was just like, I can't do it. It's the same thing. You have been attacked for actually representing the truth and the gospel and the Bible itself. And you've got this woman. Sorry, I didn't say that in a misogynist way, but it was like, you know, she was just sitting there going, treating you like you're a moron.
And
we just think that, you know, maybe if you just changed your ways, you know, stop believing in God and, you know, started believing in trans vicars and maybe the devil, that we'd let you in. I mean, you've been through this, but you deal with it in a much better way than I do.
I don't know that I do. I think it's all predictable now. I kind of expect it now. That's probably the worst thing about it. So it doesn't hit me as hard. That instance was interesting because I said that, and I told my friends, when I told the journalists what had happened, I gave them a copy of the recording. So they were able to say, the Bishop of London said, they didn't have to say Calvin Robson alludes that the Bishop of London says or this and that. They knew because they had the evidence. Likewise, I had my freedom of information request, my subject access request. So they saw the emails of the bishops like orchestrating orchestrating a dismissal.
Orchestrating the cancellation and takedown and a removal.
I was conservative, because I was Christian, because I didn't fall in line with their woke agenda. They use the word woke quite a bit in these emails too. Mm. Like they recognize what they are, but behind our backs, they don't care. But when we get access to that, that's when it's powerful.
I think that's where what I need to reflect on in my time of peace is, I am so passionate about this, how bad this thing is. And I've sort of, you know, in my own sort of canary in the coal mine type way, I'm trying to go, guys, they're going to do this, all of this that they're doing to me, they're going to do to you. that's what they'll do.
Yeah.
And I'm contacted all the time by people who've been fired from their jobs for being called a racist. A guy from BT who was called a racist for not even being racist. He worked there for 12 years, gone. At least I have a platform, I have other ways of making money, and I'm very generous supporters. So that's really good. But every day people are getting this, and I cannot wait for the people to rise up against it. And, you know, as we were saying about the Tommy March.
Some degree, you have to have being cancelled first before you can recognise it and fight back against it. Mm. It has to have hit you personally because we're all so selfish. So even people that we know and love would not rise up and stand up because it hasn't hit them and they're afraid of it hitting them. Mm. So it kind of has to. Mm. You know, my most recent cancelling was the Royal Academy of Dance, right? So they sacked me off their board. And I won in a settlement in a tribunal against them because I was like, this is my Christian belief that children should not be sexualized. If you guys want to sexualize children, that's, you know, I think that's evil, but that's not my belief. So sacking me because of that is wrong. And I won that case. But we can only win when we start to fight back. But we have to be cancelled first. And actually, the Church of England wasn't my first time, which is why it didn't hit me as hard. My first time at being cancelled wasn't political, wasn't religious. I had a really nasty head teacher in a school that I worked at. I devoted my entire being to this place. Like, I was there throughout the school holidays. I was there through weekends. Like,
is this the one I know?
I don't know. But I just worked really hard. And we got a new headmaster in, and he was a real bully, just an old-fashioned bully. He essentially bullied out all of the senior leaders, including myself, and replaced them with his friends. It was nepotism. Mm. But that was the first time I realized that, like, nothing is a given. Like, even if it doesn't matter, you could work 24 hours a day, you could put your soul into a place, but it can be gone like that and taken like that. And actually, you've got to consider the priorities in life, what's important, why you're doing what you're doing, and who you're doing it for, and all that stuff. All that stuff was opened up by that first cancellation. So after that, I was ready for it. It built up a kind of resilience.
What's it done to you? Other than the resilience, what's it done to you? Has it emboldened? What has your spiritual resilience grown?
Yes, because it strengthened. Like, that hurt. Like, I loved that place. I love the kids that I taught. I love the staff that I worked with. It was a real community. And so being like forced out, bullied out, hurt. Yeah. But I had to go through that suffering in order to strengthen myself. And now I look back and I think, well, of course I was removed from that situation because I needed to get to where I am now. And there's a whole journey that makes sense in retrospect, but at the time you don't see that. But having lived through it, it has given me that spiritual strength and courage to get on with what needs to be done.
I think you're an example to people, and you know, I think it's just so sad that we live in this. Oh, it's diverse, it's equitable, it's inclusive. It's not. It's vicious bullying. It's like we've swapped a you know, obviously society has its problems. A functioning society for a playground full of assholes where the bullies are in charge.
They are.
And if the bullies aren't in charge, it's the weird kid who's walking around, you know, with a knife or whatever, you know, and they're in charge. And the vile virtue signaling of it all, anyway.
But the reason I was sharing that isn't to blow my own trumpet or anything like that. It's to just emphasize the point that it's difficult to get people to fight alongside us unless they've experienced it themselves.
So maybe we have to, this is one of the things that someone has said to me, because someone was like, well, you know, keep going, keep fighting. It'll be a test. It'll show how much progress we've made, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, it will also show just how much progress we've made if I do nothing for a bit. And a wise man once said to me, people don't know when to sit on their hands. Mm. And sometimes you need to learn to sit on your hands.
Yeah.
And I think we do need to allow the one strata down of, you know, pure evil like you and me, who are obviously, you know, the worst people on earth. We need to let one strata down, the people who play at this stuff. Mm. We need to watch them go through it and help support them through it and encourage them and all that, and then start to gently innovate people towards some sort of peaceful return.
So we've been through it, so we can be there for them who haven't been through it yet when they go through it. Which brings me to a good point in that, you know, this whole case of yours comes down to, a lot of it's down to trust and stuff, right? And I think a bit of a guidance we can give to our viewers is never let anyone tell you to tweet something that they would not tweet themselves.
Mm. Yeah.
It's easy. There are certain people that would like to kind of, you know, in the playground when there's a bit of fight or a bit of drama going on, there's certain people that egg you on. That's never the good friend. The good friend is not egging you on into a fight. The good friend is pulling you back and saying, it's not worth it, mate. The good friend doesn't say, tweet this, it'd be hilarious, that will cost you £1.5 million, but they'd never tweet it themselves or they delete it themselves. There's a lot to consider in that, I think.
I think you're right. I think that there is, you know, obviously the genesis of the paedophile response was originally came from Douglas Murray. He said, you know, we're going to be called racist all the time. Why don't we just call people paedophiles? And that, so, but you're right. I do think, you know, one, my own vanity probably gets in the way of me going, yeah, I don't mind getting punched for this because it's right. But actually, that's not only vanity, it's extraordinary naivety. I thought the system will have to take, you know, human justice is impossible. I've never believed that human beings can, that's why I don't believe in the death penalty, because I just don't, you know, to get it wrong, I don't believe
in
killing people, but I just don't get human, the best they can do is slow it all down, make lawyers get very, very rich out of it. Lincoln's Inn Fields is so beautiful as a result of all of these disputes, and slow it down and try and find the facts, but they don't even bother doing that. And that is why we'll appeal it. And hopefully the Court of Appeal will have an opportunity to turn around. And as I said to you, and let's finish on this thing, because I want to move on to something a bit more, that the Court of Appeal can turn around and we cannot have the legal precedent being in this country that the person who throws the first punch gets the damages.
Yeah. The oppressor has become the victim.
Let's get on to your envelope, because this is more of a, it's more of a debating topic. And it's not a particularly new story, but I just thought about it. Actually, I didn't. I've got a very naughty friend called Jeffrey, who suggested it. Oh, by the way, Jeffrey also said that my very naughty friend Jeffrey said to me that it would just be hilarious if you just mocked me every 30 seconds about that court trip thing and wound me up.
Not very nice.
I know, but he's naughty. It better be the right one, because I was packing it in a hurry this morning because I was puppy watching.
Oh, yeah. This is thick as well. Gillian Keegan. I'll stop saying trans women are women. Good for you, Gillian. Education Secretary tells Telegraph she has learnt a huge amount more about this complex and challenging subject since 2020. No, she hasn't. Gillian Keegan is one of the worst of the worst, actually, of the Conservatives. I've been on panels with her before. She is vapid. One of these Conservatives that is not actually a Conservative, but loves the power, the prestige, and the being part of the establishment.
Should we tell everyone who Gillian Keegan is? Is it Gillian?
She's the Education
Gillian?
Secretary.
Yeah, she's the Education Secretary.
How do you pronounce it?
I call it Gillian.
Oh.
But
maybe
it should be Gillian. Well, you're the one who sat on a panel with her.
Doesn't mean I know how to say her name properly. just these career politicians. So in 2020, it was fashionable for her to say, trans women are women. And now in 2024, it's not fashionable. So she's saying, oh, actually, I've learned a huge amount more about this complex and challenging subject. What's complex and challenging about women being women and men being men?
Nothing.
They're so transparent in their fakeness.
Right.
What's the debate about this, though? This is quite straightforward.
Forgiveness.
Oh, okay. What about forgiveness? Go on. What?
Should she be forgiven?
Ah, has she repented?
Yeah. She said, I'm not going to call them trans women anymore.
Oh, does that class as an apology these days?
Well, it's as close as you're ever going to get from a fucking politician. I'll tell you that.
Okay, so you want to talk about forgiveness?
I want to talk about my question to you.
Yes.
Is now that she is acknowledged.
Yes.
People don't apologize anymore, really. No. But now that she's acknowledged that she's made a mistake and she said, I was caught up in guidance. I took lots of advice. Yep. I did this, but now I've changed my ways.
Yeah. I don't believe her.
Right.
And I don't believe that that was an apology. But that's a separate conversation to forgiveness. If someone is sorry for something, then of course they should be forgiven. Even if they're not sorry, actually, you should forgive them. So I can forgive her for what she said. Doesn't mean I trust her. Doesn't mean I want her to be a politician. Certainly doesn't mean I think she should be a minister of state. But I can forgive her. But do I need to? It's not me she's offended. It's not me she's done anything towards or
well,
against.
you work as a teacher. You minister to the needs of all of your community. You know, you made the point last week about the bells being a way of reminding people that they're being prayed for, you have a responsibility in society to set an example to the rest of society.
That's true.
So my question to you is, let's move away from forgiveness for a second and move towards like accountability. Mm. So I will preface this with the fact that I completely agree that it's fake bullshit. Mm. There's a general election coming. Mm-hmm. They've tried the woke crap. Yep. No one gives a cock about it. And they know that they're going to lose the election anyway. Yep. So they're trying to be conservative. So that's my view.
Yes.
But let's assume I'm a cynical sod for a minute.
Right.
And let's steel man her position. Let's is she taking accountability? Do we think that this is a statement of accountability? And she's gone, you know what, I was wrong. And trans women aren't women, and we're going to reassert biological fact, and therefore should she be commended in some way for that?
You know what? I'd commend her if she stood down. If she said, actually, I've been a damage to the education sector. I haven't helped schools, I haven't helped parents, I haven't helped children, and therefore I apologise for being woke. I apologise for saying that men can become women, and you know, endangering women and children and girls and their spaces. And I stepped down. I would commend that.
So you would say that would be, that
would be accountability.
That's honorable, isn't it?
Yeah. Politicians used to be honorable.
And courageous.
If they made a mistake, they used to resign.
Who was the last politician you felt was honorable and courageous?
Oh, that's a good question. I can't think of any of this generation, actually.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's pretty hard. I thought Charles Walker was pretty honorable and courageous during COVID.
Yeah.
I think he was. But I have, it's almost as if it's an impediment to becoming a part of this political establishment that you want to aspire to communicate within. What did you aspire to do? Well, I aspire to hang out with the biggest assholes on earth. No thanks. But forgiveness, talk me through forgiveness, because I'm struggling, as you can tell, from my fucking hell frustration about this stuff. What part does forgiveness play in that? And how does one get forgiveness?
So if someone's wronged you and you forgive them, so first of all, it's never a sign of weakness. It can be seen as a sign of weakness in today's society, but it's not. It's a sign of strength, actually, because it's you saying, I'm not going to hold on to those negative feelings. I'm not going to harbor resentment towards you. In fact, you're not going to live rent-free in my mind. I'm letting go of all of that, passing all of that onto the Lord. Because justice and vengeance belong to the Lord, not to me. And so once you forgive someone that's harmed you or hurt you in some way, you kind of release yourself from their hold, from their grip. They have no power over you, and you can go your separate way. What it doesn't mean is that I'm now your friend and I embrace you. It doesn't mean that I want you to be a part of my life. It means I've moved past that point in time that caused me trauma or whatever. So it's slightly different to what people think it means.
Yeah. To not let someone live rent-free in your head. To forgive them, I can see forgiveness as being a sign of strength. Like whenever I read, you hear of court cases of, you know, people being forgiven. You said last week of by the way, isn't he a legend? The bishop, his eye patch.
Oh, yeah.
He's back on bishop telly.
Harry Emmanuel, yes. What a man.
That's a man, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I want my kids to see.
Yeah.
What did you again? He held out a cross.
Held up the cross, like you're being attacked, someone's potentially stabbing you, and your instinct is to hold up the cross, like your defense is the Lord. I loved that. And then his second instinct was to forgive the chap and say, to pray for him.
I think so, yeah. So I think that in terms of Gillian Keegan, I'm like, I see it as, you know, kind of opportunistic,
yeah,
political rubbish,
yeah.
But As a leader, which is what you are, you know, you are a role model to community. Should you be taking what she says at face value and saying she's erred and she's corrected a sin, or she's, you know, is it a sin to? Yeah, it is a sin.
Well, I don't think she gets to self-correct in that way. I don't think she just gets to say, "Oh, I was wrong and now I'm right," because she was wrong before. Why would she not be wrong again? Like, she needs to make an adjustment. And she hasn't made any adjustments.
Well, she said she's not going to say anyone is trans woman anymore.
But as in, she's just continuing on. She should step down as education secretary, or she should employ someone to provide her better guidance, like get a better team of advisors around her or something. Like, she hasn't made any changes other than, oh, I'm now right and I wasn't right before, but I am right now. How does that help anyone?
Well, also, look at what they've overseen in education. We're seeing what's going on in Colombia. You see this this Jewish student trying to get into his own university, which he pays for. And he's being stopped by what I like to call BLM Mark II.
Yeah.
It's exactly what they are, a bunch of over-entitled, rich little babies. But I tell you, the million pound thing, which I would put every single penny I ever had on, which isn't £1 million anymore, would be on the fact that if that was a black kid and those were white kids saying, sorry, mate, we don't allow black kids on campus, the whole world would grind to a stop.
It really is crazy.
But they're letting it happen to Jews. Mm. It's becoming normalized.
It is.
And that's our education system. Again, I'm so sorry because I don't end up in this position. I'm like, those places have to be, you know, the sort of non-military equivalent of being obliterated.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Trump was in, he'd probably stop funding these universities, right?
He will.
Because they're openly racist now. And the way they're treating Jewish people is disgusting, regardless of what side you take in a foreign war. To happen in the West, to happen in America, is outstanding.
I've got some pretty hardcore views.
Astounding.
I'm worried that my views are hardening on a lot of this stuff. Because let's break it back down to first principles. In this country, and in the West more broadly, we have a very different attitude to women than they do in Islamic countries, right? Mm. And the idea of my kids having girls who are born and forced to cover their faces horrifies me. Mm. The idea that my sister or any one of my friend's daughters will grow up in a country where they're basically forced through, you know, reasons to adopt a religion and to cover their bodies horrifies me. And those that are most extreme in their desire to do this and to cover people up and to shut women up particularly, I think we should be much, much less tolerant of them. I really do.
I don't think that's a hardcore view at all.
I think the point where I think that anyone who subscribes to that form of, you know, very, very, very fundamentalist Islam should not have abode in this country. That I think it's poison, and I don't think it should be allowed to grow. I don't think it should be allowed to seed, although it has been allowed to seed, because I think exactly what's happening in these American universities, they hate Jews. Mm. It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. We want to wipe Israel off the face of the planet. You see the guy that that map that's constantly tweeted, it's like Israel's to stealing Arab land, and then you've just got a map of the whole of the Arab world and a tiny little speck in the middle, which is Israel. Why are we tolerating this victimization?
I don't know. The so-called progressive left who are supposed to be against hate are the ones who are embracing this hate of a demographic of people. So I don't know who are the allies. The far right are anti-Semitic. The far left are anti-Semitic. So it's just the centrists, the left, I suppose, the centrists like us.
And there's 90, you know, a huge amount of support for Israel in America, you know, huge amount of support for Israel in America. And yet on all these college campuses, I mean, you see the way that DeSantis in Florida deals with it. I mean, that I couldn't stop watching that video of that person going, you're hurting me with this stupid little kafir walking along. And the policeman, who's obviously gets up at about 4 a.m. and goes into the gym, just picks him up and walks off.
I just don't like the conversation. There's just no nuance in the conversation. Like, you don't have to support the Israeli government any more than you have to support the UK government or the American government in every decision they make in order to say, actually, it's not acceptable for you to ban an entire demographic of people from going to their own college campus. Like, you don't have to be fully on board with all of this to support the human element of people just going to college. It's bizarre that people say you've got to be either a Zionist or an anti-Zionist, or you've got to be pro-Palestine or pro-Israel. It's like, no, you can just be pro-people.
Pro-people, but also very anti-ideology.
Mm.
So, you know, I the thing that grates, and it's possibly something I need to explore in myself, which is, you know, I will think about, and I do think about a lot, is how, like I said, you know, if that was a black kid, I think Dave Rubin tweeted it. He was like, if it was a black kid, the NBA season would be over.
Yeah.
Like, everyone would just stop. And it was like, this ideology is so dangerous. Because it's so destabilizing.
Yeah.
And all of our, Gillian, I think, to take it back to what I was trying to say, Gillian Keegan comes out of that sort of place. She, you know, these people that I, you know, I have many faults, but I've worked in a real business for 22 years, right? So I know about the real world. I don't think any of these people have a fucking clue about the real world.
No, a lot of them don't.
None of them.
It would be good if politicians spent time in the real world before going to the House of Parliament. Absolutely. You know, the House of Commons should be a house of common people, like ordinary people, but most of them are establishment career politicians, knights of the realm.
Yeah, PPE wankers, sorry. But, you know, it's like off to Oxford. Oh, I've read a few books on political philosophy. And then they start coming to run the world. But as
I'm not, for the record, I'm not an anti or reverse snob. I don't think going to Eton and Oxford is a bad thing. I think it's great that our leaders went to the best school and the best university. That's a good thing. That people often get confused and say, oh, we need fewer Eton people and fewer Oxford. No, we need more Etonians and more Oxford graduates, actually. But we need them to spend time in the real world with real people and real problems first.
And it's something that I anticipate is going to get worse. Because what happens in America always happens here. So I anticipate, I've been to a few universities, I'm sure you've been to a few, Bristol, when I went to Bristol to speak at Bristol, they moved me around about 5-6 different rooms.
Yeah.
It was like amazing. And, you know, the antagonism of these entitled little babies.
Yeah.
And at one speech yesterday in Columbia, they were going, we want a humanitarian aid. It's like you're in the richest country on earth. Have you ever drunk water from a tap?
When I spoke at Bristol, that was the first time I had security because they were so worried about what might happen because they're so woke down there. But it shows you like who the haters are. You've got to get security for a conservative coming to speak. And we saw this with, where was Jacob Rees-Mogg recently? They got ambushed.
Appalling behavior.
What's the best university you've spoken at?
I haven't spoken at many. But Oxford was when the first time I saw this. Was years ago, and I laughed at it. My a close female friend was at Newnham College, Cambridge, which is an all-female college and a very highly regarded college, all-female college. And on the door of one of the girls' rooms, as I walked past to go and see my friend, it said, woman, W-O-M-Y-N. And then an explanation as to why she'd removed the men aspect of it. And I just thought, silly cow, you've got too much time on your hands. But that's it.
Yeah.
It's festering.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've got this a new theory, which I'd be interested to know what your thoughts on are. They know, Gillian Keegan, that little I'll change my mind depending on what I'm told to do in order to get a promotion. Yep. They know that it's not flying with the public. They know that we don't want our children's dick cuts off. They know that we don't want to divide ourselves down the lines of race because we just don't. You know, it's like everyone, it's like people saying that the St. George's rally was full of white people. There were 80% white people there, and there were also
80%. So what if it was 90% of white people?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But they're predominantly white country.
Exactly. But they know it's not.
Whites.
White. Oh, he's gone. Ding dong. Yeah. Hamza's gone. Yes.
He has.
Hamza, P45. White. He's such a knob. God, I hope. Anyway. But they know it's not flying, right? So I think, tell me if I said this last week, that we're going to go for intellectual equity.
Yes, you did.
I did.
Right. Well, maybe not on the podcast, but you've said it to me before.
Yeah. So I think that's what's going to happen is that they're going to say that there is no disparity. God, Lord's brain. Disparity in intellect in everyone in the world. And they're going to use the Christian argument against us. So they're going to say, well, we're all made equal in the image of God, right?
Yeah, but we all have different gifts.
Yeah, but hang on. They're going to use that argument against us. And they're going to say that we're all exactly the same level of intelligence in our socialist woke utopia, which is hell to live in. And if you're not presenting as an A-grade student because you're as thick as pig shit for some reason... that's because your mental health is being oppressed.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're opening the doors to those that aren't just the crazy blue-haired, perma-offended Palestine fans. Yeah. They are opening doors to everyone now.
Well, that's already happening. The best universities are already lowering their entry criteria for certain demographics because they're saying, oh, well, you know, black kids have it harder, so we need to make it easier for black kids to get in. And what you do there is by lowering the standard, you make it so that the whole of the academic standard... falls. So an A grade means nothing for your A levels. If you're a white chap who got an A and a black chap that got a C and you both go to the same university, first of all, the chap that got a C isn't of the same ability as you. So all of the content's going to have to come down too, which means the end result is less. All of it is just all watered down to nothing. We should have the highest possible academic criteria to get into the best universities, close all the rubbish universities with the gender studies and the queer theory studies and all that stuff. And just, if people can't get in, we address the problems in the first place. Like the inner city schools, address those problems. Working class kids, whether they're black or white, address those problems that are at home and at school. Don't lower the criteria. Pick the criteria up, but pick the people up to meet it.
Also, all of this stuff came from, so black studies and all the gender studies and stuff came from this idea in the first place. There's a great book called The Diversity Delusion by Heather MacDonald, and also When Race Trumps Merit, which is amazing. And she goes, when this experiment, the affirmative action experiment, was tried in American universities, and they would up the scores of certain ethnic groups and lower the scores of others, you'd have people dropping out of university classes because they couldn't keep up with them.
Of course not.
And then they would go, well, that must be a disparity, an oppressive disparity as well.
Yeah.
So therefore they created whole university courses to find out why people whose scores had been inflated in the first place were dropping out of classes they weren't smart enough to live in. So, but what's happening is now, a university degree is basically just a large bill. It's like an expensive restaurant bill now, and the food was shit.
Yeah.
And what we're going to be left with is that it's now the Oppression Olympics is going to be open to everybody because they're going to need more. They need more participants. So if you can just talk about mental health and go, oh, I just would have achieved so much more if it hadn't been for my mental health. It's why I don't really like talking about mental health.
Mm.
I like talking about struggle, but mental health, I you know, there because there were. I knew a girl in my life who's no longer with us, who was chronically depressed and hopeless for her whole life until she took her life. So it's a major issue. We're going to invite everyone in. So posh kids are going to be able to come in and go, my mental health's really bad. And I want to go to Oxford, but I can barely spell cat.
Mm.
You know, so like IQ levels of Joey from Friends, not a dog.
Yeah.
Three letters. Yeah, that's what we're going to end up with.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to bring us back to Gillian Keegan, your view is that she's not to be taken seriously. It isn't a genuine apology, and therefore forgiveness doesn't even play a part in this.
Yeah, I think it's irrelevant to that conversation. I just think any politician who suddenly finds the truth on election year and has spent the last 12 years or 13 or 14 years denying the truth is not to be trusted.
Yeah.
I think most politicians are not to be trusted anyway, but especially politicians like that.
And just to remind us when we're talking about what forgiveness is. So just tell me, if I was a child and I said to you, Father Calvin, what is forgiveness?
Forgiveness is offloading the negative or the sin from your soul, offloading it from you, the guilt, the anxiety, the bitterness, resentment, offloading all of that and passing it all off to the Lord.
So saying, the forgiveness belongs to God.
Judgment belongs to God, not to you.
Yeah, God, I've got to remember that. Because when you're wronged and you feel under attack, you either are a rabbit in headlights, you run in the other direction, or you stand and fight.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I stand and fight, and actually, I should do something different, which
is... It doesn't mean you can't say, look, I've been wronged. I need to fight this. I need to take it to court, whatever. But it's that harboring of the... Like, you've got to forgive the perpetrator so that you're not stuck in that moment. Until you forgive, you're stuck in the moment of whatever happened.
Yeah, I forgive. I think I forgive these people for what they've done. I mean, I forgive them for it. I find it... I suppose with a judge, it's slightly different. You can't really forgive a judge, I suppose. She's not really my judge, ultimately.
No, well, but forgiving doesn't mean forgetting that it happened. It doesn't mean ignoring that it happened. It doesn't mean pretending it didn't happen and going back to how you were before. Of course, you should learn from these things and grow from these things. It just means not holding on to it.
Mm. There you go, chaps. The lesson in forgiveness, and I hope it works for you, and I will practice it, will attempt to practice it. And thank you for your input. I thought I was going to stymie you. I thought I was going to get you.
You were really excited about that one.
Well, I thought she's repented, and you've just gone, no, she hasn't. So it's hard. But my friend Jeffrey, is going to be upset, and he's going to have to work harder.
Well, I hope she asks for forgiveness from the Lord. That's the most important forgiveness, because the Lord always forgives us. Then I hope she seeks that.
They have prayers in Parliament, don't they, every morning? Yeah. Do you think anyone's paying attention?
I hope so.
There must be some of them.
Yeah.
There, but there are some very deeply convicted people in there.
There are.
And
very few in number, but there are some.
Very few in number and very far away from the front benches. Mm. We've got a... Well, no, actually, I think we can cover it in the third envelope, because I can pretty much guess this being the... election, mayoral election special.
Right.
What's in this envelope?
Let's have a look. Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about the election yet.
No, we got...
London mayor elections. Why is it not London mayoral elections? Susan Hall honestly believes she can deliver shock defeat of Sadiq Khan.
Really? What do you think? Can she? So hang on quickly, just for context. We've got, at the moment... Wi-Fi. Thanks, MI5. We're not planning anything. basically, last time I saw the polling data was Khan was looking about.
He was like 41%. She was about 25%, and everyone else was much less than that. She wants to get back to basics. I like Susan Hall. Mm. I've known Susan Hall a long time. I think she's a good conservative. I think it should make a difference if she could get in. I think she's the only one with a chance of getting in. I personally will be voting for Susan Hall as the mayoral candidate, and I'll vote for you on the London wide, of course. But in terms of getting rid of Sadiq, she is the only one that has a chance.
I sent her a message, and I said, do you think it'd be a good idea? And I sent a message to the person who, the top Tory who is in charge of selection of mayoral candidates and putting together their guy, as they say. And I sent them both a message, and I said, do you think it'd be a good idea for me to point those that, you know, however many voted for me last time, I think got 57,000 and then 180,000 second preferences. So let's assume that, you know, halve those second preferences. So say this, you know, for want of a better, say maybe 80 to 100,000 people.
Sure.
Substantial amount of people. Do you think it'd be a good idea if I pointed those that support me and I said, please vote for Susan Hall, and that you said, and it'd be great to have, you know, Lawrence on the London Assembly?
No. No, CCHQ would not go for that at all, because you're far too conservative for them. CCHQ is a monster, horrible, horrible machine that just finds yes men and people that won't rock the boat in order to make sure that the Prime Minister has an easy time and he has no one to threaten his position. Unfortunately, CCHQ need to go. But I don't actually think the Conservative Party wants to win London. If you look at what happened with Sean Bailey, they didn't give him any support. Susan Hall's had very little support.
She's done well with what she's done. She has. She's tried hard.
They both did well with what they've been.
And I really like Sean as a person, actually. Yeah. He's
a good man.
He's one of those few people who went from really disliking me to us becoming actually quite close.
Yeah, I think he's a genuine Christian, and I've got a lot of time for him. I think it's easier for the Mayor of London be opposition to the government. I think once the Tories lose the general, they'll fight hard for the mayoral.
Yeah.
So they have a bit of power again, but B, they can always say, oh, it's the government's fault. As Sadiq always does, it's the government's fault. It's the government's fault. We need to get rid of these metropolitan mayors. It's a pointless waste of taxpayers' money.
That's exactly. Well, we polled it. 37% of Londoners want rid of it. So I do urge you guys, there's an orange ballot paper on your... when you go into the ballot box tomorrow, or if you, well, post the vote's too late, but if you go in, there's an orange ballot paper, London Wide Assembly, and you can vote for me, and you'll actually be voting for me to give Sadiq Khan crap. Well, not crap, just hold him to account for the vileness of what he does.
I would hate it.
Did you see him say on television after this horrible story? I mean, and they're not isolated stories of this vile attack where a little 14-year-old Nigerian kid was stabbed to death yesterday morning. Sadiq Khan on the TV, he lives rent-free in my head, by the way. I know he does, he's on TV and she's talking about the massive increases in knife crime and the fact that London is a stab city. I mean, don't be on your phone in London. Don't wear a nice watch in London. Don't let your kids play on the streets in London in case they get caught. That's what he's done to this city. Yeah. And she points it out and he turns around and goes, I think you've been watching too much of The Wire. And then when he was interviewed on New Year's Eve, he was asked about the 30% increase in knife crime. which is now more than 30% since New Year's Eve. And he said, it's not the knife crime, it's probably it's you having a mobile phone. I mean, he's an unaccountable... okay, so I really can't bear him. Mm. And it's visceral and deep. Mm. How do I cope?
What is it about him that...
He's a liar. Mm. First of all, he's trying to impose an ideology on something. Mm. So, but then we can have the argument back and forth, which we have had about, you know, if you're going to impose an ideology, one imposes the ideology that has existed within the country.
Yeah.
But his ideology is palpably failing London. So if 47% of Londoners are going to vote for him, then I have to go back to that old adage that imagine how stupid the average person is, and then imagine that half of them are more stupid than that. I mean, that's literally how I've got to go. How you can vote for this man when he has made your city... you can't travel around your city. Mm. You're surveilled wherever you go. Mm. The police are completely two-tiered. Yeah. Our children are being raised in schools, had their entire education shut down over a cold. And, you know... and
it's an awful city now.
But it's vile.
But he's made it much worse. But I don't think Londoners are voting for him. I think Londoners are very few and far between in London now.
They are.
People voting for him aren't Londoners. We need to get rid of postal votes again. That's another thing we need to look into. He has an imported vote base. Of course he's going to win.
But that important
one of the reasons I'm out of here. London is done, man.
Yeah, it is done. I think cities across the West are done.
Yep.
But the do you think that it might be closer than they think because of the fact that his imported voter base may or may not have voter ID, which he thinks is racist, unless it's at his own stupid thing.
Interesting, isn't it?
Fireworks display. Yeah.
It might be close. I honestly don't know what the polling's going to be like. We'll find out tomorrow. I hope that he doesn't win. If he does win, I hope it's a slim majority, but I fear that it will probably still be a big majority in his favour.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that it was great to see Hamza Yousaf lose his... Yep. And look how quickly he lost. You know, he was chugging along all joyfully like he was on his little one-kneed scooter.
He's got these awful people. What's this journalist in the Times put an article out today? Let me get his name. Absolutely awful piece. Kate Forbes cannot be the next First Minister of Scotland because she's Christian. This chap, Kenny...
Why do they hate Christians so much?
Farquharson. Now, bear in mind, Scotland is still a Christian country, not just in legislation.
Kenny Farquharson.
Yeah. 53.8% of Scots are Christian, so a vast majority. 1.4% of Scots are Muslim. 1.4. That's nothing. Yeah, it's okay and appropriate and representative to have a Mohammedan as the First Minister. You know, the first thing he did is get his prayer buddies in and got the mats out and, you know, rugs down in Butte House and prayed to his demon. That's the first thing he did. And that was acceptable. He says this, what did he say? It was a badge of honor to have a Muslim leading us. It's like this self-hatred and this horrible, oh, anyone but a Christian. It's just discrimination.
Mm. It is open, blatant discrimination. They're going to do it with the Jews, and then they're going to do it to the Christians. And and our grandchildren, and or maybe even our children, will be being forced to be covered up. And that's off the back of the most appalling government in the whole world. And just because we always have to do a little reform section to our we got to do a little GB News section as well, but we'll do a reform section. It was interesting to see. Did you see the clip of Richard Tice on Politics Live?
No.
Talking about the boats again. And he was saying, you know, they were again hiding behind the law, you know, maritime law, international law, all this sort of law. And it's like, why can't some politician just stand up and go, I'll declare a national emergency. They have said that they will do that. But you deploy the Royal Navy and just nudge the boat. The minute it crosses into British territorial waters, just nudge it back into France. And if all of Danny Finkelstein, who I think is a Conservative peer, forgive me if I'm wrong, was arguing the progressive position against him. So he was saying, I think it's Kirsty Walker or whoever runs that stupid show, was saying something along the lines of, international law requires that the people have to consent not to come to Britain.
Wait, what?
The migrants have to consent not to come to Britain in order to send them back.
What law is this?
I don't know. Stupid. God knows what law it is, but it's probably EHCR, I'd imagine.
The way we interpret these liberal laws in such a liberal way is just ridiculous. Honestly, to protect the borders, the first job of the government. But in terms of Hamza Yousaf in Scotland, that's another role to get rid of. These devolved parliaments need to go, as well as the metropolitan
mayors. But if you abolished the mayoralty, you would essentially be devolving powers back to the boroughs, wouldn't you? So, you know, that's what you would be
doing. I
mean,
if you have devolution, it's got to be the most local level. But get rid of this middle level of devolution with the first... The parliaments, the assemblies, and the metropolitan mayors, all of them need to go. Have one centralised United Kingdom government. We are the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. We need one government, and it needs to be a small government. And all the local decisions need to happen on a local level.
Was it Blair that did the devolution?
Yeah.
And was it Tony? It's amazing how rich Tony got out of all of this.
It is,
wasn't it?
He messed up the country as a result.
Destroying his own country. Yeah. Horrible man. Whilst murdering a million Iraqis in there. What do you think about... What do you think about the fact that it was Britain's and America's overseas actions that have created this migrant surge? Do you think that's true?
How is it?
Well, you know, we went and bombed Iraq and, you know, we destabilized the region. The Iraq is a very unstable place now. Libya is a very unstable place now. Right. You know,
that got to do with migration?
Well, do you think that we are some way culpable for the fact that because we went and bombed the crap out of people on a false premise, right, and deprived them of their home and, you know, went and occupied Afghanistan for 20 years?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a neocon. I don't believe in all this engagement in foreign disputes. I think it's outside of our remit. But I understand what you're saying, that we did it. So do we have a responsibility? We have some responsibility, but our responsibility is to help these nations recover. It's not to just take all, you know, what percentage of Albanians live in London now?
Oh, it's something crazy.
Like a majority of Albanians live in this country now. It's like all of it. I mean, that's hyperbole, but all of this is a great mess. The way to solve other countries' problems or help them solve their problems isn't to say, oh, all of you come and live here. It's to say, well, how can we assist you? And how can we help you help yourself?
Yeah. But just as I was coming here in the car, because I can't go on the tube thanks to these judgments and the media coverage of me, because I just don't want to bump into an enemy in a confined space. I read that the Garrick Club are... is it Eric Clapton? Sting. It's always going to be Sting, isn't it? Sting and John Simpson, I think, as well, has said that they're going to resign their memberships unless the Garrick Club let women in.
Oh, my goodness. It's so stupid, isn't it? There's nothing wrong with having men's clubs being men's clubs.
I love them.
Protect same-sex spaces in the same way that the feminists have said, oh, women must be in men's spaces, is very similar to the way that the trans lot have said, well, these men need to be women's spaces. Actually, no. Protect women's spaces and allow men's spaces. There's nothing wrong with the gentleman's club.
Protect men's spaces, because Pearl, who I know lots of people don't agree with, Pearl Davis, she said that leftism is the political manifestation of femininity. Wokery. She said, where women get in, it's woke. Now, I just thought I will entertain any idea that anyone puts in front of me. So it's I'm not agreeing with her.
Okay.
But I do, I always ask myself, I'm often asking myself, where does leftism come from?
I like Pearl. She was very supportive when I got sacked. I don't agree with most of the stuff she says, but I like her.
Yeah, also, in the olden days, it was okay to disagree about things. Yeah. So should the Garrick hold their nerve?
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, they're no longer a gentleman's club. The whole thing should just be shut down if they're going to say, okay, we're no longer a gentleman's club. Then close it. Mm. Like, what were the founding principles of the club? It's a great shame to see all these traditional clubs becoming woke.
It's a war. It's part of the cultural capture, isn't it? It's a war on everything that we once stood by.
But I said to you a while ago that feminism is the area that we conceded ground to begin with.
Yes.
So even people that see themselves as conservatives now have conceded ground on the area of feminism. They're like, well, of course we should let women in now. Of course it's the right thing to do. It's for equality or egalitarianism or whatever their excuse. They don't even see it as woke anymore. They don't see it as liberalism, but of course it is.
I think I'm probably a bit more I think intellectually consistent in what you're saying. I just think that, you know, I don't want really talented women to be left by the wayside just because we think that we're calling a woman who wants to succeed in business or succeed in media, you know, or succeed in anywhere as in some way, you know, oh, it's just feminism. I want, you know, I want women to have those opportunities and to succeed as well. I do. Is that your way of saying you're wrong?
No. I like that. That was good. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with women succeeding. I don't think the feminist argument is about women succeeding. The feminist argument is about women must succeed, and there's a difference there.
Yes, you see, you're so much better at this than I am.
Oh, thank you.
It's true. It's women must succeed. Right. So it's an imposition rather than an aspiration.
And they made it derogatory for a woman to want to stay at home, to raise children, to be a housewife. They made all of that no longer an option. It used to be, okay, women should be able to go to work or stay at home, because the default was for women to stay at home. And I don't think most people saw a problem with that, but that was the start of the slippery slope, in that now it's women must go to work. And of course, most families see that as a necessity because they can't afford otherwise, or they're not willing to sacrifice to afford otherwise. But now it's seen as the norm for women to go to work. And actually, women are more miserable. They're unhappy. Men are more miserable and unhappy.
Families more miserable.
Because we're supposed to work together in that way in many of the fields that we do. And that families are suffering as a result. Feminism has driven this country down the drain.
I think you're right. I mean, I wouldn't go... I think Jordan Peterson made the point a while ago that, you know, a couple of hundred years ago, men and women were, you know... the richest men and women were as rich as the poorest people are today, you know, and that they worked hard for everything. But it's interesting, like, you look at the landmines that people can step on, the Joey Barton women's football landmine being one of the really interesting ones that was sort of forced to go, it's brilliant. And it's like, no, it's not.
No. Nobody likes women's football. Nobody watches it. No one cares.
But I hope that it gets better.
Why?
Well, because
it doesn't need to be a thing. Just because
of my women's tennis argument. My women's tennis argument. Women's tennis is great.
Okay.
Cool. Women's tennis is better than men's tennis, in my view. Men's tennis is like...
But women don't need to do everything that men do, just as men don't need to do everything that women do.
They don't, but maybe these little woke bastards are woke bastards, because the promise of our generation, and it's, we don't get to live this promise, by the way, you or I, but my father did, and you know, I don't know whether your dad did or not, but it was the promise that you could buy a home, occasionally go on holiday, feed your family on one income.
Yeah.
And the mother or the father, it could have been in some situations, raised the kids.
Yeah.
And that is gone.
Yeah.
And with it is the family is gone.
Yeah.
And if you look at these horrible little rabbit hutches that they're building around London, which is the future of living in these vile urban cesspits, there is no dining table room. There's no space in their little open plan living areas for a dining table. There's no space for families to sit down and talk. Yeah. And there's no space for children to learn. Yeah. And our job is to teach our children and to imbue the values in them, which kept our society upright. And as I said, the whole thing is completely upside fucking down.
But that's so easy to fix as well. All we need to do is move out of the big cities. Men work on the land or have a real job in the area that they live and work in, and women stay at home, raise the children, don't send them off to state school to be indoctrinated, like raise your family as a traditional family. It's an easy thing to do. It means that every single individual in the country can have a part in turning the country around.
I think that's going to come. I have a feeling that, as you know, as always, nature abhors a vacuum, and this vacuum is so oppressive and vile for just your average person. And people are upset about it with me every single day. What are you going to do about it, Loz? What are you going to do about it, Loz? And I'm like, I can't, you know, it's what are you going to do about
it? Exactly.
Is the question.
People look for a leader. You don't need a leader. You need to take action yourself.
Well, you do need leadership. So you need brave, courageous people like you, and to some extent me, to stand up and say, oh, this is what I think. I'm not going to withdraw from my position. This is my hill, and I will die on it. On the 1st of June,
yes.
In conclusion of this, in terms of, you know, what can be done, you know, the ever demonized Tommy Robinson is organizing a free speech march.
Fantastic.
In London. And I, for one, am a huge fan of this. Mm. And I know you are as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we want to urge everybody, you know, to not only just put that in the diary now.
Yeah.
But to tell friends and bring friends, because it's only by showing our elite establishment, who are becoming ever more distant as they destroy the middle class and leave us all as slaves and serfs to their whims and adulations, to come on the 1st of June to London and march for right to free expression, free assembly.
Yeah, I think you're right. Leadership is the way, not leaders. I think that's a good way to put it. And everyone collectively needs to come together to make the change.
Oh, we got through it and I didn't cry, which is quite good. Tell me something. What is the rest of your week looking like?
I've got Calvin's Common Sense Crusade on Thursday.
How's Calvin? I love. I can't tune in because I don't know. I must subscribe to Lotus
Eaters. 3 p.m. on Lotus Eaters.
Yeah, 3 p.m. on Lotus Eaters.
Are you not subscribed yet?
I haven't.
Terrible.
I know. I'm thinking of
it's
moving.
Like as little as £5 per month.
I know. I'm thinking of moving my Free Speech Union support. You know, because everyone's got a lot of subscriptions, and I'm trying. And also. For a variety of reasons, I've been left slightly impecunious in these recent years.
Yeah.
In no small thanks to our friends at GB Fuse.
Mm-hmm.
Dan yesterday, I love Dan. Dan sent me a short clip. He said, "Have you seen this?" And as is often the case, and I open up the Twitter and goes, "You're blocked from viewing this person." Yeah. I'm like, "I have no idea." So I just sent him a screenshot back saying, "I don't know what it's about." And it's Patrick Christie's. So
he's blocked you.
He's blocked me.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So Dan then, obviously, because he's clever, managed to share the video with me. Yeah. And it's just this. I haven't seen GB News for a long time. But somebody in the makeup department needs speaking to, because It literally looks like Venezuelan state TV. They're all so permatan. You know what colour they are? And it was Patrick Christie's caked in makeup saying, grovelingly apologising for something. But the weird part was he went, "I'm really sorry, even though it didn't happen on my show, I'm really sorry."
Oh,
and I didn't see what happened.
I saw Mark Dolan apologising the other week as well. They're all kind of in
this
boat.
The thing he should be apologising for is not styling his hair.
Well, I think they're all apologising for not standing up for us, essentially, because they know that they are afraid now of their jobs, so they have to apologise every week. Anytime something, "Oh my gosh, that could be it, that could be the last time I've been on air," they have to, I'm sorry, my overlords. It's sad, really.
Well, it's interesting that we have 83 now, 83 or 84, 1,000 YouTube subscribers, thanks in no small part. It's grown, I think, by 10 or 15,000 since we started doing this. And we are getting regularly, last week's app hit 900 live viewers, right? Oh. Talk TV gets 15. GB News gets 2,000.
Really?
So GB News has over a million subscribers to it. And we have a fraction of that. Okay. So we have, I'm not good at maths, but it's a fraction of it. Well, and we're getting a very dedicated and really supportive and intelligent and thoughtful audience who are tuning in. So I'm hugely grateful to everyone who does. And I'm hugely grateful for you for the fact that we can talk about these things and also learn from each other and go somewhere. And it has a fucking reason to exist. Yeah. It's not just like, "I'm really sorry, I'm sorry." And I also had this woman advocating for trans crap on GB News. That's
fine. I don't even think about GB News. Don't watch it. I did love the audience there. As much I love our audience, is fantastic. But the one thing I liked about GB was the audience. They were great people. So I'm hoping some of them come over to us.
They will. What's the week going in store?
Just my crusade and then church.
Oh God, I'm jealous of you. Jealousy is bad, isn't it? No, I'm going to wind it. I'm winding it down. It's actually been amazing just being with dogs. You just stare at dogs. It's like my new TV. It's like my new telly.
Turn off the telly.
Yeah. So you've got that. What have I got? I'm going over to talk to media people today to see if we can get this back end built around so that when YouTube inevitably get upset with us for saying whatever word you're not allowed to say, which is just appalling that happens in this country. We should have a Free Speech Act. Protects YouTube shouldn't be dictating what you can and can't say in Britain. It's none of their sodding business.
True. Yeah.
And then I am going to. What am I going to do? Not sure. And I'm seeing Lizzie, and hopefully the puppies will start opening their eyes maybe soon, and maybe start waddling around and stop being worms.
Yeah.
But look, I've got through the whole Mary Harrington. And forgive my rage, and thank you for your peace in listening to it.
It's a good chat, thank you.
And love you.
You too.
Thanks for watching, and we will see you probably tomorrow as well, because Thursday
at 7 p.m.
Yeah, Thursday at 7 p.m. But tonight, Wednesday 7 p.m., Fox and Father, it gets a bit spicy.